Blue Light Special. Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair?
Yeah. I had an opportunity this summer to participate in with a group called the Team River Runner. That is a group that was started at Walter Reed Hospital to get vets out of the hospital, both physically and mentally. And we have a chapter here in Oregon, and it's been around for about 7 years. And what they do is go rafting and kayaking on calm water and on white water. So if you go to the site teamriverrunner.org, the guy getting into the kayak with no legs is in our chapter here. Well, Val Shaw, who is a disabled veteran, invited me to come along with him, and I so wanted a break from my campaign, so I said sure. And what we do is we launch off from the park there in Oregon City, and we paddle up to the falls, Willamette Falls, and go back. And I met the nicest vets, and I was able to actually do it all by myself. I was so worried that these vets would show me up, but we really had a good time. It was a way, what they say is it, the Team River Runner, they provide all the boats, the outfitting, the safety gear, the instruction, transportation. Then afterwards, we have food for participants and volunteers. And their sort of motto is, our road to recovery is a river, helping our wounded veterans. So it does create a wonderful environment of healthy adventure, and I just wanted to share that because anyone can go down there. If you want to find out the time, all you have to do is find Team River Runner, and they aren't doing it now, but they'll be starting up again, and they go almost weekly. But it was really a good thing for our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Appreciate that. Colleagues, as you see on the agenda that we have, the very first thing we have to do is adopt the standard committee rules. I think we've all been in possession of them. They aren't any different from the other committees that we have. And so with that, I'm going to open a work session.
Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated today, February 7th. Yeah. 2017.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the proposed committee rules day to day. Is there any discussion? Senator Olson, any discussion? Happy today, Senator Olson?
I'm fine today.
You are?
Yes.
Madam Vice Chair? Do I see any opposition? If not, then so adopted. And Senator Courtney is excused for the record. With that, colleagues, we're going to go ahead and move in. The format, I think, if you all recall, is and the council has put together a work plan for us that lists all the bills that have been before the committee. We have traditionally, and unless something changes, we were given 2 days. We won't need the second day most of the time during this session, and the bills assigned to us will allow us to have a public hearing on all the bills brought forward by our colleagues. Doesn't mean they'll get a work session, and we'll hear bills in the first week and then work amongst ourselves to determine which bills will be posted for a work session the following week, so on and so forth like that. Today we actually have two bills before us, and we're going to begin with, and we do not have any committee measures. We do have three LCs in draft that are, for a better word, placeholders, and I've chosen not to bring those forward because they're placeholders, and as you all know, when you put a placeholder up, then everybody starts asking, why are you doing this and why are you doing that, when in fact they are simply placeholders for veterans, emergency preparedness, and the military department. Is that not right, Council? Okay. And we'll introduce those at some point before we run out of against the clock. And then also we do, of course, have our priority bills that Madam Vice Chair and I or other members can bring forward, and we can discuss if we find another bill that we need to. And we have how many committee bills?
I believe it's four per committee after the deadline, and two of those have to be a mutual agreement between the chair and vice chair. Mr. Chair.
If you hear of an issue or there's an issue that comes up and we need to address, please don't be bashful and please don't wait for the deadline. Okay. With that, colleagues, we're going to open a public hearing on SB 143. If you would, Council, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 143 has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. It requires the Department of Veterans Affairs to administer two grant programs to support existing and establish anew veterans resource centers and coordinators on college campuses without duplicating the functions of county veteran service officers, and appropriates general fund dollars to that end. It directs ODVA to train, provide technical assistance, and keep coordinators connected, permits ODVA to cooperate with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and to solicit and receive funds from alternative sources. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2017.
Thank you, Council. We have three panels basically signed up, and then we'll open testimony for others. The first panel will be Kimberly. Do you want to speak to Bill?
I will when they get
okay. Kimberly, RB, and Stephanie, if you would go ahead and come up.
And, Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I was working with the Department of Veterans Affairs trying to think of something that would maybe be very useful, and this actually came out of conversations with ODVA, that this would be very helpful for our college campuses, and so that's why the bill is before us right now.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Ladies first. Sorry.
Actually, I would prefer to go last, if that's okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ladies Director, listen. The Marines would like to go last, if you clean up, please.
Thank you, Senator Buckquist.
Okay.
I don't mind starting. Chair Buckquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, my name is Kim Douthit. I'm the Veterans Resource Specialist at Portland Community College Sylvania campus. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard, a Navy spouse, and the child of a Vietnam-era Navy vet. I prepared some notes just to give the committee an overview of what a Veterans Resource Center is and why it's valuable on our campuses. This is based anecdotally on my work and some conversations I've had with our students. Our VRC is a community space. It's a safe space for vets. They know they can go there. They can get answers. We can start working with veterans before they even start school. We're rare in that way. Most of our campus service centers can't even help a student until they are enrolled for classes. But we get them as soon as they contact us. We can help them with the application process and then the additional complication of accessing education benefits. The resource coordinator is an advocate for veterans on campus. We are in a position where we can advocate to administrators about the unique needs and the importance of student vets on campus, as well as work directly with vets to support their needs, to help them gain access to benefits, and to advocate for them in the classroom if they're experiencing issues of bias, if they are in need of going through any kind of appeals process for financial aid, for academic appeal, if they feel they've been unfairly graded. So we're definitely that piece. We are also a resource for faculty and staff on campus when they are working with veterans in their areas, that we can be a place that they can refer them to, and they're comfortable knowing that they're going to get the support that they need on campus. So when you think about other diversity centers in a similar way, but veterans are a unique population. While at community college in particular, I think we would agree that they'll find their peers are closer to their age because we serve the adult learner. They are typically more mature emotionally. They tend to have more family commitments, and they've had certain life experiences that are unique in that way. And I lost my place, but we're all very passionate about what we do. These are important programs on campus. We serve as a place where we can form partnerships with community partners. We at PCC have a very good relationship with our county veteran service offices, so we're able to get those additional access to benefits for students with disability claims, and it's just, I think, a very necessary program. But I was talking with some of my students. I wanted to make sure that they had their voice heard. the students say they know that they can come to the Veterans Resource Center and they're going to get answers and they're going to get results. And you don't always find that in the bureaucracy of a large college. So that to them is important. And then they spread the word and they bring other veterans in and they form a community and they find peer support. Current students are mentoring the new students coming in through the onboarding process, and even through, speaking from the community college perspective, through the transition to a four-year university to continue their education. I think that is the most important. I don't want to hog all our time, so I'm going to pass it on to RB.
Thank you, RB.
Thank you. Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, and members of the committee. My name is R.B. Green. I'm the Clackamas Community College's Veteran Services Coordinator. I think one of us represents a quarter of our big brother, PCC. I'm also a veteran, a 20-year Army veteran, and I've also had plenty of experience utilizing VA educational benefits and being frustrated. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 143. I've seen firsthand the positive impact our Veterans Education and Training Center at CCC has had on student veteran success. We are very fortunate to have a vet center. It was established about 9 years ago with a grant. We have currently two full-time employees, and we're unique in that we task organize in a way that both our certifying functions, our compliance VA stuff, is co-located with the veterans resource stuff. So it's kind of like a one-stop shopping center. We've found that when students feel connected to someone or something on campus, they're much more likely to do well, and our job is kind of to be that place and make that happen. We, like Kimberly was saying, focus on connecting our students to resources and helping them navigate the many obstacles to academic success. Most of our students don't have a lot of experience being a student or being a good student. They're like me. I came out of high school a very bad student with very bad habits, and I had to learn how to be a good student and learn how to navigate through the academic gauntlet. Recently, we placed number 2 in a nationwide ranking of 2-year schools by the Military Times in their Best for Vets annual issue. This success is a direct result of an ongoing multi-year commitment by our college leadership, taking resources out of Hyde, along with a strong network of supportive community members and business leaders devoted to helping veterans succeed. But we need to do much, much more. Most of our student veterans don't exhaust their VA benefits. Many more struggle to find a career path or purpose. We currently serve about 1,000 veterans and community members and certify for VA benefits about 350 a year. But we continue to deal with all the struggles that we're overwhelmed with that rather small number compared to some of the bigger institutions, between academic struggles, financial problems, mental health issues, physical challenges. It's all hard to overcome. And that's what we do. But one thing we do know is one size doesn't fit all. Every individual has a different set of needs, desires, and our purpose is to connect them to the resources to get them to a successful place. We try to individualize our assistance with counseling, advising. We have a disability resources center, various grants for books, emergencies, and child care. And we have a very unique military family scholarship endowment that's open to military family members as well as veterans who may have expired educational benefits. But the one thing we know is transitioning from military service to college life is a difficult process, and we can make it much easier and much, much more successful. We also had a student who wanted to come. His name's Chad Eady, recently ETS'd out of the U.S. Army. His wife was also in the Army, and they have two small children. They're both full-time students, and even with the post-9/11 GI Bill, are struggling with resources because it turns out rent in Happy Valley is nearly $2,000 a month. Even though our BAH is now running at about $1,800 and change, it's between childcare, books, etc., They are very challenged every term. He's a success story in that he came into the vet center, got plugged into some peers that really helped him out and get him on, got him on a course, career and academically wise, and he's done extremely well. But they struggle every month. He comes in, and it's a struggle because they share child care, child rearing, and child care duties along with school and sleep, and so they're really not together much. They're all on a kind of a six on, six off schedule. In spite of that, he's excelling academically with a 3.5 GPA. He recently won a literary competition, and that really is a testament to how peer support and having a kind of a network of support at the college, specifically for veterans where he felt comfortable coming in the door, really paid off. Thank you again for allowing me to share my thoughts with you today.
Take care of you, Matt.
Senator Boquist, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Colbreth. I'm the coordinator in the Veterans Resource Center, and I'm actually going to be reading a letter from Lynn Benton Community College that was sent to Senator Brian Boquist and was given to me by his secretary. They couldn't be here today, so I'm going to go ahead and read that for them before I give my testimony. Dear Senator Boquist and committee members, I'm writing to pledge my support for SB 143, which directs the Department of Veterans Affairs to establish and expand veteran resource centers on campuses of community college and universities available in Oregon. Lynn Benton Community College understands the unique needs of student veterans, having provided veteran support services on our campus for many years. Veterans in particular benefit from campus-based centralized resources that help them complete their intended academic and career goals. Having centralized resources or a campus VSO allows veterans and dependents timely and expert guidance on benefits and other support services. Our Campus Veterans Association has a designated space and conducts workshops for veterans as well as workshops for the campus about veterans issues. LBCC sees tremendous value of SB 143. We continue to serve a significant number of veterans and their dependents. It is my sincere belief that the statewide program expansion of this bill makes possible will be effective targeted uses of resources to assist an important segment of our community be successful in the college and in the community. We fully support and look forward to the funding and rollout of these important programs. Sorry for the reading. It's not my words, so I'm not great at reading aloud. I apologize. I have been working for PCC since September of 2012. When I first started, we were the first Veterans Resource Center on the campuses. We had 5 to 6 veterans in a day. Normally, we started in a 10 by 10 room. At this point, I have 60 to 80 veterans in the door a day. And that's on a pretty regular basis to the point that we know when they're missing. And we can call them and say, hey, I haven't seen you around. What are you doing? They're like, oh, I'm just hiding in the library studying. Great. That's what I wanted to hear. That being said, I've been attending George Fox for the past year and a half. I recently graduated, and I spent my entire last year and a half writing my senior thesis on veterans resource centers. So I have combed through all the research since 2008, and there's not tons out there. Veterans don't like participating in surveys or studies. The most that they've been able to attain from one college was 10 surveys from veterans who actually took their time to fill it out. And that was out of 600 students on the campus. I had my students fill out a 10-page invasive questionnaire that was completely voluntary and completely anonymous. It was turned in manila envelopes. And basically what I got from that data was amazing. We had 28 students in 2 days fill it out. And I had a very limited time frame of when I could collect surveys. So we all know that there have been a lot of people deployed. So I'm going to talk about the demographics, specifically of the PCC campus, and what we learned from our students. Since the post 9/11 GI Bill was enacted in 2009, over 600,000 veterans have entered higher education. And according to a recent report by the American Council on Education, upwards of 2 million military veterans will take advantage of their government education benefits and attend higher education institutions before 2020. That was by a study that was written by Jones in 2013. As of 2014, there were 2.6 million post 9/11 veterans. As an end date of the Gulf War era has not been established, the post 9/11 cohort will continue to grow. The VA projects a population that is expected to increase 46% between 2014 and 2019. The former Veterans Affairs Undersecretary Allison Hickey noted that 73% of all separating veterans plan to utilize their education benefit. What we also know on the flip side is that typically we lose 83% of students in the first term across the nation. And the reason why is because we don't have support services. I have an 82% retention rate in my center. So you can see what a flip does. When you actually put the services there and you have people like myself and Kim, and we take the time, we're their first person to go to. If we can't figure it out, then we find a community partner that will. I've been a babysitter in my office. I have been the person that actually holds their weapons in their safe when they decide that they want to cause self-harm. I've been in the position where I wanted to cause self-harm. In 2013, I left a very abusive marriage. I lived in my car for 2 months with my 3-year-old daughter at the time and my service dog, because service dogs were not allowed in shelters. And I worked in the Veterans Resource Center during that whole time, and I never once said anything to anybody because it was so embarrassing. And now I get to have students come into my office and tell me their stories, and I have to tell them, it's okay. I was here too, and it's going to be fine. Because unless they have somebody tell that to them and actually recognize that they're not the only one who did this, they're not the only one who's felt this way, there's not a lot of hope. I have pictures where everyone is gone. Everyone. From suicide, from people who've been in the military and killed overseas, to people who were home on leave and were hit by a drunk driver. As you have people spread across the nation, the statistic goes up of how many people you know that will die. But I don't even have pictures in my house because that's how many people are gone. When surveying our student population, I asked a bunch of questions, and they could write strongly agree, agree, disagree, and strongly disagree. I'm just going to give you the agree and strongly disagree compiled into one percentage for the purpose of this to kind of downsize it. I have difficulty with health concerns, physical and or mental health. 43% of the 28 students answered agree. I've thought about dropping out of school. 36% gave the assumption that they agreed. I feel the support I received in the VRC has helped me stay in college. 87% agreed with that statement. The VRC staff has been helpful with my transition from military to civilian life. 93% agreed. And then I asked questions concerning their health, specifically markers for PTSD. I have trouble falling or staying asleep. 79% agreed. I often feel irritable or have angry outbursts. 40% agreed. I find it difficult to concentrate or remain focused. 47% agreed. I have repeated disturbing memories, thoughts, or images of my military experience. 47% agreed. I have physical reactions, heart pounding, trouble breathing, or sweating when I'm reminded of experiences in the military. 40% agreed. I often avoid activities and situations because they remind me of the experience I had while in the military. 32% agreed. I feel distant or cut off from other people. 57% agreed. I feel the VRC has helped mitigate the feelings described above. 89% agreed. I am aware of myself or a student veteran who's experienced or expressed concerns about, and then I put check all that apply. So the concern of loneliness, 64%. Employment, 50%. Panic attacks, 57%. Helplessness, 46%. Suicidal thoughts and attempts, 32% out of 28. Relationships, 64%. Money, 57%. PTSD, 79%. Anxiety, 75%. Depression, 68%. And loneliness, 64%. I know this is an overwhelming amount of statistics, and you're probably not going to remember them, and that's fine. But I told them exactly what I was going to do with this information, and this is exactly what I'm doing with it. They're not going to get up here, and they're not going to talk about their experiences because they don't want to. They want to forget they ever happened. The point of our offices is to create a way that they can talk with other veterans and actually go to people who understand exactly what they are going through. And that's really all I have to say. Thank you very much.
You had a lot to say, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you for your service, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, I do have one question.
Vice Chair.
Where does your funding come from?
My funding comes from the college, and I have approximately $22,000 a year to serve 416 students on my campus.
Okay.
I'm partially funded through PCC General Fund, and the rest comes from student activity funds, and my budget is the same as Stephanie's at my campus, and we have similar enrollment. We're the two largest campuses at PCC.
We were funded by a grant. I believe it was a Walmart grant 9 years ago. And then since then, it's a college, 100% college. I'm not sure what budget item it falls under. Student services.
Senator Olson, comment? Question?
Because you're the most experienced, and this is relative to education. In your three experiences, I mean, post 9/11 GI Bill, cost to go to college, so on and so forth like that, several of us here went to college on the GI Bill, which is frankly before some of you were born, just so you know, okay? We're that old. But it didn't, obviously, I worked part-time. I was not exactly bright enough not to get myself entrapped by an officer recruiter. And so, you know, I ended up in ROTC, so I had $125 a month from ROTC. But I'd work part-time, work that to go to school. My question is really of the present GI Bill, and what's available out here. I mean, how much do you think, in your guys' experience, does that really cover? Like, what percentage generally does that cover in the expense for, a couple with a child or for two veterans to go to school? 20%, 30%, 50%, 40%, 50%, 60%? Just estimate.
Well, while I was going to college, because I just recently graduated in December, I have one child that I had to pay full-time daycare for. And I had to work at the college full-time on top of cleaning houses at night to be able to afford to live, take care of her, and pay for daycare. My daycare roughly was $1,000 a month, and that was a low-cost in-home. And on top of that, the cheapest place I could find to live that was acceptable was 1,500 and some, and then you add all the utilities and everything else on top of that. So,
okay. And how much did the GI Bill cover, and how much money did you have to borrow to go to school?
I borrowed.
If you don't have to tell me.
I borrowed roughly $32,000 on top of working, and that's working full time and cleaning at night, and yeah.
And you were in the Marine Corps 4 years?
Eight.
In the Marine Corps 8 years. Post 9/11, and post 9/11,
yes.
And you went to school for 4 years, and you still had to borrow $30,000 and work full time to get through.
It actually took me five,
right?
But yes.
And do you think, in your experiences, is that pretty much the average?
Sometimes it can be more if you have two children coming out of the military, which several of my students are in that predicament. They can't, like, one of them has to go to school and stay home with the kids, and then the next one can go to school, because having both parents in there and trying to afford daycare for children that are not potty trained is, it's impossible, almost.
please jump in.
Oh.
I'm driving at a point here because, I mean, the GI Bill, contrary to popular belief, is the myth floating around the community and even the buildings that, you know, well, you get, you spend 4 years in the military and you get free college. It's just not true.
No, it's not true. And you earn that benefit. It's not free money. But I just wanted, it got me thinking that this term we had some challenges. We had a number of snow days that delayed the start of our winter term. Some of our students' benefits were certified late, which means the VA got the information from the school late, which means their benefit was paid late. And even though they're receiving this benefit, they're working sometimes in our offices, additional jobs. I know of a student, a female vet, Marine Corps, not Stephanie, but who is working three jobs and going to PCC on her GI Bill benefit and is still down to the wire with these monies. And when the benefit is paid late, it causes a very urgent financial situation as far as getting those bills paid. So we were bumping up against that a lot this term. And just to emphasize the value of someone like us on campus, at my campus, I was able to help fill that gap with a grant that we administer through the PCC Foundation, the Veterans Emergency Grant, which was started by a staff member and which we administer and can help with some of those costs. And we were able to fill the gap with a PCC emergency loan, which would not normally be available to students after financial aid is dispersed. But we were able to get an exception because we knew the benefit was coming. We could verify that as the staff person, and so we were able to fill that gap. So it just reemphasizes the need for these programs on campuses for veterans, because that type of anxiety from not being able to pay your bills definitely affects your performance in the classroom.
Amen. Chair Boquist, one thing I'd like to add that you're right on the money about is the there's no pay for gaps. So we just came off a month-long gap. Mm-hmm. So when they got their paycheck for post 9/11 GI Bill recipients on 1 January, they got paid for 9 days, or depending on the school, but maybe a third of their typical check. Through the Christmas season with kids and everything, and the increased heating bills and snow days and snow chains, and then same thing in January. Summer's even worse because you have nearly 2 months of no gap. The VA used to have gap pay, which they no longer have, so it really does make it hard. Financial management becomes a real issue and a real need.
It also depends on what day the person's class ends. So if your classes end on a Friday, you'll get BAH up through Friday. If your class ends on Monday, you're only getting BAH till Monday, even though the end of the term goes till Sunday. So people can actually fluctuate in what they got paid by almost $300 to $400 in a week. And in 2010, when they actually took away the full pay, because what they did was rob Peter to pay Paul, essentially, they said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to give this benefit to the reservists who have deployed, or a percentage of this benefit to the service members that deployed. And they absolutely deserve that. But what they did was said, we're going to prorate BAH. So they made it look like they were creating another program when essentially they just robbed one program to pay the other.
And it's a program.
The post 9/11,
that's
VAH.
Right. That basically, contrary to popular belief, doesn't pay for everything.
No.
Most veterans have to borrow money, upwards of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, depending. Mm-hmm. They have to work full time besides going to school. It's not the big benefit everybody thinks out there.
We get $1,000 a year for books, and I can tell you, my first term, my books were roughly $1,000. I had one book that cost $300, and I never even opened it.
Just a final thought, that's also only 36 months of benefit. Yeah. So while we're not, typically a student graduates in 4 years and you have gaps, but 36 months of benefit, as you heard, Stephanie, it took her 5 years to get her degree. That's not even likely to get them completely through. It is normal for it to take longer than that amount of time. So they may run out of benefit before they're ready to graduate as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. And I apologize for the federal government.
Thank you for saying that.
Apology accepted.
Thank you.
I can't fix it.
I know you can't, but thank you.
Oh, panel two, the second panel. Thank you very much. Panel two is Andrew and Jock and Lewis.
Right.
please lead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jock Mills. I'm here as the representative of all seven public universities in Oregon. We provided you information regarding our support for Senate Bill 143, and I merely just wanted to kick it off letting you know all seven of us are very interested in this bill and highly supportive. And we've provided to you just a thumbnail sketch of the programs that we currently provide. The bill divides programs between A, Category A, and Category B universities, and we just wanted to give you a sense of this is our initial take as you move forward with the legislation. We are now compiling, to answer the question that you had earlier, systematic information about the resources we're currently investing so that you have a good idea of what the financial picture looks like as we move forward with the bill. I don't have that information for you today, but we are in the process of developing it, and that's all the time I wanted to take. You have a thumbnail sketch of the institutions, and I'd really like to defer to Andrew Holbert, who's here from Western Oregon University and is a veteran service officer there. So if I could do that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Holbert. I'm the Veteran Services Coordinator at Western Oregon University. Many of the folks that spoke before us hit some of the finer points, so I don't feel the need to reiterate some of those. I do want to take the opportunity to explain what a veteran center is and what a veteran services coordinator is, and perhaps how they are different than some of the other veteran services coordinators within the VA system. I can only speak on behalf of Western Oregon. That is the extent of my experience with these roles. So at Western, we have a veteran center. It is roughly a little over 800 square feet. We provide an academic support setting. It is a dynamic vet center, so we do have space set aside for a silent room with computers and a printer, and a whiteboard, some tables, and then there is a lounge space, if you will, that is comprised of a TV, some couches, and several homely items such as a coffee machine, refrigerator, and microwave. We find that veterans come in at all hours, whether it's early morning or late evening. We leave our Veterans Center open for the extent of whatever the building is. The building is the Warner University Center, which is the hub building for student life, and so we find that that is an extremely helpful resource for them. As for myself, I'm the Veterans Center Coordinator. My role is extensively to be student support. I don't do any certification, and I don't adjust any financial benefits. In my experience, that seems to be an extremely beneficial role to play. As many times as you heard before, the finances are late, and their experience with the finances is negative. So I am able to advocate for them on their behalf. I am able to walk them through the education process, but primarily we set up events and student support. I do employ two VA work studies through the Veterans Center. So that's about the gist of that. We find that the Veterans Center does an awesome job at providing assistance for transition. We operate under the philosophy of integration and not isolation. We want to help veterans be more engaged in the community, and that starts here on the campus. However, we do not press that forward. That is just an encouraged atmosphere that we have. All of the support that we get at Western is general funded. We do have a student veterans group on campus. They're a chapter of the Student Veterans of America, a national organization. I'm not sure if any of the members of the committee are familiar. They're a large organization, and they have given us some funding in forms of grants to help get students to conferences for professional development. But we also do not receive any incidental fees at the moment. You have to be a chartered member or chartered organization, school. Government has to recognize you for a certain number of terms consistently, and over the last year or two there has been a lapse, so you do have to wait 2 years to re-engage in that funding. We receive about $5,000 a year, and we service the Veterans Service Center services about 200 veterans a year. We certify 200 veterans a year. I'm a four-year Marine vet. I used the GI Bill. I went through school with two kids and then eventually had three through the process. I worked full-time. I am lucky to have a wife who was extremely supportive and stayed home. I worked, I went to school, and that's how we made meet. And that's all I have.
Thank you.
Chair Boquist, Vice Chair. I'm going to print. Is it Monet's or is
Manis.
It Manis? Okay. Manis Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Lewis Franklin, and I have been teaching at Lynn Benton Community College for 16 years. I'm a retired First Sergeant from the Oregon Army National Guard with 21 years of service, two deployments to Iraq, and a deployment to Louisiana in support of Hurricane Katrina operations in 2005. I've been the advisor of the LBCC Veterans Club since 2010, and there are roughly 300 veterans who are serviced by Lynn Benton Community College. The Veterans Club was created in its current state in 2010. The membership of the current club is approximately 3 to 50 members, with approximately 14 active members. The club offers mentoring and camaraderie for those making the transition to civilian life or those veterans who are just starting to explore college life. The club offers a bookshelf of shared books to help offset textbook costs. We moved into the current Veterans Center in spring of 2016. Chair Boquist and committee, I am failing. That's a little bit dramatic, but that's kind of the reality of the situation for me. The students in my program and the 300 veteran students at LBCC are being shorted simply because there is not enough of me. I do not blame... as I mentioned, LBCC has roughly 300 veterans and does not have a single staff member dedicated 100% to veterans' needs. I do not blame LBCC. We're a small college in the shadow of Oregon State, and money is always tight, as I'm sure you're all aware. Last year, LBCC saw the culmination of 10 years of work. In the fall of 2015, we acquired a chunk of real estate on the Albany campus for our club. Using the lessons learned by Oregon State and their Veterans Lounge, the LBCC Vets Club, along with the support of one of LBCC's VPs, vice presidents, was able to secure a little used room that we could now call the Veterans Center. The remodel and the furnishing of that room were not funded in any way by the school due to limitations in funding. The community and the students came together to make it happen. Had there been money available, the Veterans Center would have occurred long before that. To put numbers to the impact of the center, prior to that center, I had anywhere from 1 to 3 active veterans in the club. Now I have well over 12 active members of the club. On a daily basis, the center serves as a meeting place, safe zone, and study area for at least 20 veterans. That's on a daily basis. In the center, a veteran can feel at home, with a branch flag standing in a place of honor, a place to get some coffee, a place to share insights or stories as copies of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence watch from the walls. As a group, these veterans are becoming more engaged with the campus and the community. This year, the veterans are talking about offering classes on networking and interviewing to the general student population. Student veterans are a unique population and clearly thrive when they have a space dedicated to them. The other day, I was talking with my dean. He asked me how much of my time I spend on veterans' issues. I replied that I could easily spend 2/3 of my workload on veterans' issues alone. I receive no release time and no pay for what I do for the veterans. I do it simply because I have to, because I am a veteran, and I believe in what veterans are all about. I have seen the good that the dedicated veteran staffs and centers have done at Oregon State and Western Oregon. I feel that community colleges and universities statewide could benefit from three simple things that Senate Bill 143 could help to provide. One, a Veterans Resource Center, ideally a one-stop veteran service center where certifying official counseling and meeting areas are all centrally located. 2, affiliation with a national organization such as the Student Veterans of America, also known as the SVA. They have resources, training, and motivational benefits. 3, a dedicated veteran resource coordinator who is not also tasked as the certifying official. College students generally are only around for 2 to 3 years, and their focus needs to be on their education. A dedicated staff member offers the consistency and smooth transition as students move through the education process. Campus veteran resource coordinators help veterans transition to campus life and support them on completing their education. They can help connect veterans with their community and community resources. They can provide an important link to the County Veterans Service Officer for federal benefits. Again, veterans are a unique population with unique insight into the world and generally a slightly broader life experience. They are quickly to become active in their schools and in their communities and are more likely to stay active well past their graduations. But, and this is a big but, they have to be engaged early on, and they need to feel integrated and part of something. Being with other vets helps with this transition. Colleges can be intimidating liberal bastions in the eyes of a veteran. Having a veteran center and staff will be crucial to transitions and engagement for student veterans. Thank you for your time. I welcome any questions you might have.
Yeah, Vice Chair. You're welcome.
Yes,
Madam Vice Chair.
When this concept came forward, I had no idea what was already going on and how there is such a need. It would be interesting, I don't know if the department has this information or not, who has these veteran centers and who doesn't. And then who would like to have them, because this bill is set up for a grant, because we don't know this budget cycle if any money's going to go to it. But, once we have this in place, a little bit of money, and then see what the need is, I think just having a grant will actually show what the need really is statewide. So thank you for coming. I appreciate your comments.
Roll some questions.
No.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your service. Thank you for serving. Last panel, Cameron, Andy, Gus. Someone lead, follow, or get out of the way. One of the three.
Well, I guess I get to go first here.
Okay.
Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Senator Mona Anderson. My name is Gus Bedwell with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And as I was thinking about what to say today, I was listening to everybody else's testimony and the opinions that they've offered and their perspective from their positions. And I have to tell you, they're right on the money with the need here and the work that they're doing. I can speak about that because of my experience with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs as a veteran service officer, and then eventually as a campus veteran service officer, and then later working with Oregon State University as their military and veterans coordinator, and now with ODVA as the training and development specialist for veteran service officers. In the last year and a half, I've had the opportunity and honor to actually work with many of these individuals behind me. Still, even though my main role at Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is not working with them, they've been able to allow me to continue to work with them and create a partnership and a network with some of the individuals who testified today to keep in touch with them on what they're doing on our campuses, because we want to make sure we do the referral from our veteran service officers to them and make sure that they get the benefits that they need while they're going to college and whatnot. The biggest thing that I heard today that I want to emphasize that I think is true is you heard these folks talk about giving these student veterans a voice on campus. And that's what these centers and these coordinators do. They give a voice, and they are a referral source for the veteran and their loved ones to access those VA benefits. You know, Chair Boquist, you mentioned it earlier that it does not pay for all of the education benefits. And one of the things that wasn't mentioned is that when you look at the post 9/11 GI Bill, there's also a sliding scale within that particular benefit to where you may not serve a full 3 years of active duty service, so you don't get the full range of that particular benefit. And that can be a negative thing as well when you're trying to go to school at a very costly school, whether it's public, private, that type of thing, and raise a family at the same time. The other thing is that, you know, as you've heard from Kim from PCC and Lewis as well from Lynn Benton Community College, and even Andrew, is that there's that connection and referral to our veteran service officers. So they're not trying to do the veteran service officer work. What they're trying to do is make sure that the student veterans understand their benefits and get to the right people to access those benefits. So that's a great partnership. And having additional coordinators and centers on campuses across the state will help to continue to bolster that partnership and make sure that veterans are not just getting one or two benefits, but they're getting the full range of benefits that's available to them. So that's what I'd like to offer. I'm available for any questions if you have any questions.
Are you going to sit there forever, Andy, or are you going to talk?
No, sir. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Olson, and Senator Courtney. My name is Andy Smith, and I work for the Association of Oregon Counties. On behalf of our county commissioners, I want to testify enthusiastically in support of Senate Bill 143. This, as you've heard today from the testimony from all of these folks that have talked in detail, this bill represents a critically important piece that is missing from the system right now in terms of serving our veterans and their families. And at AOC, we view that this approach of the bill is certainly very complementary to our current efforts, our CVSOs, fits very well together. And across the state, I can share with you that our county commissioners and my interactions, I know that they see this throughout their communities, that certainly across the higher ed spectrum, certainly true for the bigger schools, the seven bigger schools, but of course the especially true for the community college system. There's great opportunity. So I guess in short, the question isn't whether this makes sense, whether we should do it. It's really a question of the how. So I'm very pleased. Our commissioners are pleased that the discussion is happening today. So it's really the question of what it looks like when we get to the point of a strategic approach, how we do that. It isn't whether we should do that. It would be how to do that. So thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and we look forward to helping you move it. Thank you.
Thank you. Director.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I like for once batting cleanup. You have heard a very real need from student veterans and those student veteran coordinators. We have heard about that collaboration across the county, the state, the service organizations, the community colleges and universities united behind this. This is going to be one of the best bills that we have out there for veterans this session, and in what can be a very difficult budget for all of you and for the state at large, there is that ray of light of Measure 96 resources that, you know, when we passed House Joint Resolution out unanimously and bipartisan last February, when 84% of Oregonians stepped up for it, it wasn't solely to support work at ODVA or at the county VSOs. That's certainly a part of it. But the governor recognized how do we better mobilize these partnerships of others that are serving veterans, including student veterans, veterans engaged with mental health resources and housing and homelessness. So always a question when a bill has that rider of going to Ways and Means with that fiscal impact. But we think there is a lot of value to it and embedded in the governor's recommended budget that we'll be presenting first to Ways and Means on Valentine's Day next week. There is $1,250,000 identified to better support student veterans. And obviously $1 million is a lot in our universe of veterans work. And it doesn't solve all of the challenges that we heard here today, but it would go a long way through a grant program to further expand and enhance these seeds of amazing efforts on our campuses across the state. Incredibly, over 10,000 student veterans use the GI Bill every year. It is a $145 million scholarship program on an annual basis, so $300 million a year coming in on a biennial basis to better support student veterans. And now this little bit of our state and local effort to make sure we're getting the student success outcomes for that significant investment of our federal tax dollars. So I am happy to take any questions as well. And thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Madam Chair.
No.
Chair Wilson.
Yes.
Please.
Could you tell me, you talked about the funds that are available that they don't take advantage of. Can you give me an idea what kind of dollars we're talking about?
So, in particular, if you have a reservist or a National Guard soldier who does 1 or 2 year type deployment, they don't get the full range of the post 9/11 GI Bill. They get a percentage of it. And so sometimes it's been communicated to them that they'll get 100%. They come home to find out that they get 60% of the benefit. So it's only 60% of their in-state tuition and fees, 60% of their housing allowance, and 60% of the book allowance. On top of that, many veterans are only seeking 1 or 2 benefits. It might be the education benefit or it might be the health care benefit, and they may not be aware that they have service-connected compensation or other benefits that are available out there to them. So by having them connect with a county or state veteran service officer, we can look at those other benefits that might be able to supplement those percentages that they're not receiving. The last thing is we just recently saw the Marine Reserves as an example that were deployed to Honduras that originally were told that their deployment would count for the post 9/11 GI Bill. Well, when they came home, they found out that in 2012, the Department of Defense had changed a little policy in their budget finance practice to where that particular deployment, even though it was federal call-up, it fell under a category where it won't count for the post 9/11 GI Bill. So now these individuals are scrambling to try to figure out how are we going to pay for school and that type of thing.
Can I follow up,
please?
Don't be so excited, Mr. Chair. do you think with the new leadership in Washington, D.C., that some of these glitches can be worked out if we sent letters back and said, you know, could you possibly look at this and maybe make a change here?
You know, honestly, I don't think it will hurt to be able to engage, and I know that, you know, that's something that, you know, when we're asked, we do that as well. Unfortunately, some of these things are done at a, you know, at a Congress level and you know, in those bills and that type of thing. And but I don't think there's any harm in you know, engaging the process and seeing what can be done to help with that type of stuff. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, I think the last number I saw is we have roughly like 30-some thousand. No, we have 25,000 non-conformed. We're about 35,000 Iraq and Vietnam, or Iraq and Afghan veterans. Is that right?
What's the Senator Boquist? I'd have to pull up those numbers. But that sounds about a quarter of our veterans population, both across Gulf War One and the most recent conflicts since 9/11.
I believe there's roughly like 25,000 non-commissioned officers and officers, and about 25,000 of the other. So, and if there's 10,000 veterans going to school, the likelihood is, you know, there's 30,000 to 40,000 who have educational benefits that probably fall into the 60% category, or they're single service deployments for the National Guard and they didn't get, and they got screwed. Frankly, got screwed. That's the bottom line here. So, and thank you for addressing me, Director. I mean, I guess you're the only person here because what's the status of the fiscal? You have to ask LFO for a fiscal. We generally get an indeterminate because it's supposed to go to Joint Ways and Means. Right?
Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry. My attention was divided.
When this goes to Ways and Means, it will go with a like a light if it goes to Ways and Means because it's going to Ways and Means. Is that right?
That is typical. That okay. If with, they do the full analysis once it gets to right. The Joint Ways and Means Committee. Typically.
Right. I don't want to do that, Director. If you look on page 2 of the bill, which you may not have before you, it talks about the integration of these Veterans Resource Centers and the normal VSOs and those positions right there. I'd like you to come back to the committee with some information in regards of how you see that interplay doing. Let's just give you an example. You have a PCC center, right? And they have a veteran, and then there are the traditional VSO positions in which they go out and try and get all these veterans benefits, everything from medical to what they weren't doing. The colleges and universities themselves are actually pretty good at reaching out and grabbing those educational benefits. It's the other slice of pie that these veterans that should be able to reach it. And what I'm interested in is knowing a little bit more in the coordination, because you have county veteran service officers, with the exception of here, which would probably not be Lynn Benton, but would be
community.
Chemeketa Community College, when there's not your county, your state veterans officers are here, and how you see that interplay would be working between the two of them, and look at it across the board in the terms of the community colleges and counties that we do have VSOs and we don't have VSOs in, and then in terms of looking at it from a package type perspective. You have X number of community colleges, you have X number of universities, and you know what, and we have kind of an idea. We have some of the universities are basically all getting roughly $22,000 in some package. We heard that, right? There's a variety. How are they funding themselves now? You know, what is the, not necessarily the optimal way, but we'll just say the Marine Corps way, right? What is the bare bones? What's the Air Force way? What's the Army way? What are the tiers in here in terms of what are we really talking about? Not just sending down blind before we send this down to Ways and Means, but look at it and say, this is sort of what a price tag would look like. This is sort of how it would integrate with the veteran service officers. And, you know, if we were doing this at Oregon Technical Institute, for example, and this is purely hypothetical, and, you know, we don't have very good support or we don't have a full-time VSO, I don't know whether we do or not. I mean, how would those integrations work? And how would you envision that working out, and what would a push package look like? So basically, sort of pre-structure hypothetically for the committee of what one of these grants would look like and how it would interface from the other side. So that then we could figure out, you know, the best way to resource it. Because you say, the pool is small, your boss and I are not in agreement, okay? You and I aren't in agreement in the verbology, but we're in agreement. We need to do the service. And so the question is what does this look like? What sort of a cost are we really talking about? And then the second thing I want to do, just if you'll indulge me, colleagues here, is I'd like to hold off for about 2 weeks on this because I want to go to the House committee, and I really think that the House committee needs to see the presentation that we just saw without this going to Ways and Means. So I want to ask the chairman of the House committee if you would have an informational hearing in regards to what we just heard here.
So it was so powerful.
Right, so that our colleagues
with the panels, right,
over there then understand what it is we're trying to do instead of us going to Ways and Means reaching back up to the House. And so there's more of a unified approach. If this is what we want to do as the cornerstone, as you said, Mr. Director, if this is one of the cornerstone pieces, then the question is let's get the House on board so they understand what's going on before we go forward. Other than that, I just put it in the work for next week, but I think we need to work it a little bit more so that we can understand and convince our colleagues in the House and then have some direction to go with our colleagues in Joint Ways and Means when it goes downstairs. You have a better idea, Madam Vice Chair?
No, that's it.
Okay.
And Chair Boquist, members of the committee, we're happy to price out those range of options and what it would look like. But we see them, the county veteran service officers and these student veteran coordinators, as very complementary and symbiotic. We've had a lot of experience. I believe it was 2009-11 biennium when we had our five statewide campus VSOs kind of on a circuit rider mentality or a circuit rider process going to different campuses. That felt more competitive because they were trained veteran service officers submitting claims back to the Fed VA. Counties felt that it was kind of infringing on that core operation at the county VSO level. Mm-hmm. Here, where we've experienced for those campuses that have student veteran coordinators, it's that link out to camp or to county VSOs when they need that Fed VA disability or healthcare navigation, mm-hmm. And a range. Similarly, those county veteran service officers are not often able to navigate those internal to campus issues that take a lot of relationships across faculty, staff, and right. students. We see that as that it goes together well, and we're excited to further brief you and the House.
And I'd like you to reach out to Jock that's back there and the HEC and the universities, and so we get a coordinated picture of what this would look like between the community colleges, between the universities, and between the department.
And we'll have a rare area of agreement for between the community colleges and universities with this bill.
That is for sure, I can tell you that. Madam Vice Chair, anything else? 2 weeks, how much time do you need?
That sounds good, Chair.
If you'd repost this for a public hearing and a possible work stage in 2 weeks, and then go ahead and get the light fiscal or the typical transitory document we need from Ways and Means so that we have that available to us, too. Okay. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes. So is our analyst, are you the committee administrator or the analyst for the House veterans also?
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, no. Brad Bolk is a hire with the department expansion, but the chairs are in close conversation, and of course I'm in close conversation with the other analysts.
Yeah, we have their schedule. They have our schedule, and so I don't see that. And the only reason we'd postpone it is if Representative Evans wants to have a hearing over there and see the same documentation, because I'd really like to have their input, considering, I mean, when you go down to Joint Ways and Means, it's going to be a joint decision, and if the House members are operating from a disadvantage on information, it would not be very good. Okay. Senator.
Thank you. Just to be clear, you're including all the universities and all of the community colleges.
Yes.
So we got 17 and 7 or 20, like 24. They'll all be on board with this.
Right.
Thank you.
So what I want to know is what is a package? It doesn't mean we come up with, we can do all of them, but if we have a package, we know what the formulation looks like, and you can time phase sequence something. And, of course, as the bill was written, as Senator Monis Anderson knows, I mean, it's the typical deal is, you know, it doesn't give the university or some of the option to take away their resources. This is a supplemental resource to an existing resource, same as we do under the laws that we wrote for the VSO programs. Other comments? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Is there anybody else that wants to testify on this bill that's not signed up? And if the community at large out there didn't grasp what we're doing, what we're trying to do is come up with a cost analysis of how this program will be implemented and then try. Normal process for a type of bill like this would leave our committee, if it was passed out, and go to the Joint Ways and Means, which is comprised of House and Senate members, and we'd like to ensure that the House members on the House Veterans Committee also have an observation and an understanding of what it is we're trying to do so that we could gain their support in the Joint Ways and Means process. And so this will probably be rescheduled 2 weeks from now for a public hearing and work session, unless the chairman of the House committee would like to have some more time. With that, colleagues, we're going to close the public hearing on SB 143 and open a public hearing on SB 480, if you would, please. And Amy, if you're still around here someplace.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 480 revives a retired license plate, the Support Our Troops plate, and puts it back in statute. It requires a $40 annual surcharge per plate, in addition to some other fees, to support Oregon's veterans' homes. After recuperation of administrative costs, it appropriates general fund dollars at the outset to be reimbursed by June 30th, 2019. Requires the Department of Transportation to consult with the Department of Veterans Affairs regarding design, and takes effect on the 91st day after signee die. And I believe Amy is going to go into the changes that took plates out of statute and put together an administrative process recently in 2015, and this was one of the old plates previously. Is that right?
Chair Boquist and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. I have submitted some written materials. Along with that is a colorful chart of the various plates that we have in Oregon today, and some of those plates that used to exist and no longer are available for sale. So as Ms. Ross indicated, there have been two fundraising or awareness type plates available in Oregon over a number of years. There's the specialty type plates that get added in statute. Those are things like the Salmon Plate, the Crater Lake Plate, most recently the Trailblazer Plate have been added. And then in statute there was a provision for something called group plates. Those include the Veterans Umbrella that have something like 30 different plates underneath that, and then other things like University of Oregon, Oregon State University, Share the Road. Those aren't created in statute, but a group can come to DMV and administratively set up that plate, pay a fee, that sort of thing. And over time, the legislature has made small and large changes to those two various programs. The most recent large change was just last session in 2015. House Bill 2730 made very significant changes to the plate program. And what it did was move the creation of new specialty plates to an administrative process at the DMV. The process created in statute was that an organization goes to DMV. They describe what they want to do. They have to pre-sell vouchers for plates, 3,000 of them, to demonstrate interest for folks that would want to purchase that plate. And then once they turn in those 3,000 vouchers and the prepayment, then DMV begins the implementation, gets that plate ready to go. And then once those plates go on sale and folks have come in, turned in those vouchers, gotten those 3,000 plates, in addition, each subsequent year that plate needs to sell 2,000 units, or that plate becomes retired and we don't produce anymore. So the legislature really dealt with this process, or tried to deal with it, and move it over to DMV for administrative work. Another thing that I will say about license plates is that sales are very difficult to predict. We've found over time that perhaps about 10% of registered vehicles will be interested in getting one of these special or group type plates where you pay a surcharge and you get some nicer looking plate on your car. But 10% of registered vehicles is fairly constant. So when you add another plate, there's a bit of a redistribution rather than typically bringing a whole lot of new people into that group of folks getting the special plates. And also of interest, and this is not typical at all, but for support our troops, that there was a plate that existed in the past under that old group plate program. Unfortunately, that plate didn't meet the sales requirements under statute, which at that time I believe were about 500 plates per year, didn't meet that requirement, and so that plate became retired. We didn't produce any more and then sold out the remaining stocks. That was some time ago, over about 4 or 5 years. That plate sold just under 500 units. So that's kind of the summary of the lay of the land. What the bill would do is create a new plate in statute, that specialty type plate, support our troops, and we would work with the ODVA designing the plate, work with law enforcement so it's visible, work with the proponents, and bring that plate to fruition if that were the direction of the legislature. And I welcome your questions.
Nope. Thank you for the historical background. Any questions? Thank you. Anybody else like to testify on Senate Bill 480? If not, thank you. We're going to close the public hearing on SB 480. Colleagues, our next meeting is next Tuesday. I believe there is a little informational piece into that meeting, too, right, so that we can avoid a next Thursday meeting.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's an informational presented by Services for Rural Veterans, provided by WestCare.
Okay. And then there's the typical bills. So unless Madam Vice Chair has anything else for the good of the order, Senator Olson, Senator Courtney. So the only, at this point, SB 143 will not carry forward, but reschedule for 2 weeks so we can get some additional information. And with that, colleagues, we will see you next Tuesday. Next Tuesday. We're adjourned.